What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and you are listening to the Hunting Gear Podcast on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, so welcome. Be sure to check out all of the other podcasts on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. Man, I think we're sitting at about somewhere around 25 episodes a week we launch. We got about 20-ish some different RSS feeds, tons of really good content. And so I strongly recommend going and if you like this podcast, if you like the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, definitely go check out the rest of the Sportsman's Empire lineup. Now, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about Western hunting gear and equipment necessities. Okay. And last week, I believe we talked about bow hunting necessities. So we got into the bows, the arrows, the broadheads. We left weapons out of this conversation today, but we did include products like what you would need if you went on an out-of-state Western elk, backcountry elk, public land mule deer, whether you're hunting from a cabin, whether you're hunting from a truck, whether you're hunting from hiking in and setting up a camp. We talk about products like boots. We talk about products like water filtration systems, hunting packs, knives, game bags. So that style and that kind of products. So that's what today's topic of conversation is. Now, I do have to do a couple commercials here real quick, so do me a favor, go to these companies' websites and check out all the products that these companies have because they support this podcast, and you by going and checking this out, you would be supporting me, so please go take a gander at some of these products. First on the list is the Feed Hub. Now, if you are able or it is legal in your state to run a feeder, Feed Hub is a device that can connect to any spin cast feeder on the market. And what this allows you to do through the Moultrie mobile app, it allows you to on demand and instantaneously adjust feeding times and levels. It's like, oh man, I'm going to feed my deer right now. Bloop. Hit a button. Feeder goes off. You can schedule feedings. You can remotely unclog feeder jams. You can monitor feed levels. All of this is done with through the Moultrie mobile app through Feed Hub. Now, why is this so important? It is important because it allows you to do it all remotely. You don't have to be invasive and go in and disrupt your hunting property. You can do it all remotely so that your time is spent more efficient moving in to, you know, all times of year, really. So if you're feeding to keep deer on your property, or after the season to keep deer on your property so you can find sheds, or as a baiting type situation, the less amount of times you go into that property, the better. And so, especially if you have a smaller property. So go check out the feed hub at MoultrieMobile.com. Next, we have Code Blue. It's getting that time where I'm going to start thinking about the upcoming season, where I want to have all these mock scrapes placed. And I've had some really good success in the past 2 years with the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. I don't know. I set up a mock scrape kit. The Rope-A-Dope. I put a trail camera over top of it and I just watch what happens. And then after the season's over, I pulled these cards and dude, every single deer on the property visited it. Does, fawns, bucks, young bucks, old bucks. It was just something that they would come to investigate. They didn't necessarily actually do any scraping. Sometimes bucks did, but I'll tell you this right now, man. They came to investigate it. And if you can get a deer to come in and investigate a mock scrape, especially if it is within shooting range, man, that's a huge win right there. So go check out codebluescents.com and read up on all of their real and synthetic deer urines, all of their scent elimination products like shampoo, the sprays, laundry detergent, and a whole bunch of other things. So go check out all their products, codebluescents.com. I do have a discount code, NFC20, and that's going to get you 20% off. And then starting in June, so in a couple weeks, I just signed a contract with Reveal Cellular Trail Cameras by Tacticam, and I'm going to get into more details about that, so stay tuned for that. All right, let's get into today's episode where we talk about backcountry hunting necessities. Good vibes in, good vibes out, and enjoy the show. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today I am joined by good friend and outdoor enthusiast, elk hunter, deer hunter. What would be a good word to describe you when it comes to your ranking as a bow hunter or a hunter? Savant.
idiot savant. Yeah. Hey. Mistake maker.
Yeah. How there about you that? Go. There you go. Yeah. Tim Kent, how we doing, man?
I'm great, Dan. How are you? Thanks for having me on again. I can't believe you keep inviting me back. You must be desperate.
I'm not desperate. I just want the cream of the crop. I feel personally, this is God's honest truth, that between the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Hunting Gear Podcast, I feel I put out some of the most relatable, informative, even entertaining hunting themed podcasts that are out. And now that may make me sound arrogant, but you know, if you want to be the GOAT, you got to back it up, right?
Amen to that. Amen, man. To that. No, I think you're doing a great job for a long time now. Yeah. So it's been cool to watch it all grow and change and manifest into what it is now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay, so here in Iowa, we had some, I just found this out yesterday. Okay, so there's been some rules and regulation changes here in Iowa that are going to affect how things are done on both private and public land. Okay, so here is how I think all of this started. The governor of the state of Iowa called all leads of all agencies, whether that's agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, the DOT, at the Board of Education. All of these agencies got pulled into a meeting, and the governor said, I want us to address all gray area laws. I want to try to remove as much gray area as possible with laws, and we need to make things more black and white. Okay. So out of that, you know, specifically for the deer hunting community and the hunting community, a couple things have happened in Iowa here within the last 4 days. The big one and the one I probably support the most is they closed the loophole on shotgun hunters being able to use a buck tag in a party hunt scenario. So previously, let's say I lived in Illinois and I came over to Iowa to hunt with a group of people. If I shot a buck, somebody else could give me their tag, and I could, even if I only had a doe tag, I could walk away from that hunt with a buck. And so what happens is there's a lot of guys that they come to Iowa, say, "Hey, Mr. Farmer, I'll pay you $500 if you let me hunt your farm. I'll drive you into town. You buy a tag. You can sit in your house. I'll have my doe tag and I'll shoot a buck. Oh, we were party hunting." And so there's that loophole that has been closed. And I think that's a really awesome thing. What do you think about that? Do you support that?
Oh, I thought there was more.
Oh no. There will be more.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds good. I never knew that was something that was in effect there. Here in New York, we actually have something similar where you can, it's only for doe tags, not for buck tags, mm-hmm. but you can allocate two of, if you have them, you can allocate two of your doe tags to somebody else if you wanted. So, you know, if my daughter has four tags and toe tags in her pocket, and she decides, it's too cold, I don't want to go hunt anymore this year, mm-hmm. she can actually sign one or two of those doe tags over to me or to my dad or, you mm-hmm. know, a friend of ours or whatever, but not on the buck tag side of things. Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't realize that was a possibility, even especially in Iowa, you know, yep. that coveted Iowa tag. That's quite interesting.
Yep. And that's only for shotgun season though, because, you know, yeah. I think you could probably, you can do deer drives, I guess, with archery equipment, but it wouldn't be considered party hunting at that point. Right. Okay. So there's that one. I like that one. Now here's the one that I just don't understand. They said that on public land, the only item that can be left overnight during the hunting season is a tree stand. Okay. Trail cameras, ground blinds, decoys are the three big ones that have to be removed from the woods every single night before you leave. So essentially, you can use trail cameras, but you can only use them when you're out there hunting. You have to remove them. They can't be in one place for multiple days in a row. So, you know, that one I feel like it would be hard to enforce per se, but at the same time, I've talked to a couple resources here in Iowa on why that happened, and you know, just like Kansas and their recent trail camera ban on public land, they pretty much made that change because of residents complaining that there's so many trail cameras out, there's so many people on public land, and people think that they can claim spots on public. And so there's been a lot of bitching from, whether it's, I'm guessing residents complained about it too, non-residents complained about it. And so now they're just like, okay, well, you can use a trail camera, but you can't leave it overnight. So essentially, the way you look at it, it's almost like a complete ban because, I mean, you're gonna walk into an area, you're gonna leave a trail camera up, and then you're gonna come back. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But that's the new one. I feel like a lot of states are gonna start heading this direction.
That's wild, and I think we saw the beginning of those dominoes falling a few years ago when a couple of the Western states put measures in place like that.
Yeah.
If I remember right, Montana was the first one, and then Utah followed, you know, a couple years after that. And then, like you said, Kansas did some stuff. I think New Mexico made some changes recently in the last handful of years. And it's interesting because you start dancing on the question of like fair chase, right?
Right.
When we're talking about scouting cameras, and listen, it's a tool that many, many, many of us use, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a tool that many of us love. There's a tool that some of us hate, you know, for various different reasons and what have you. But that, to your point, kind of eliminates a lot of the point of having a scouting camera out. Now,
exactly.
I would say there are instances, and I'm sure you've been there, where you're trying to plan your afternoon sit or your next morning sit, and you're like, oh gosh, I don't know where to go. And maybe you have two stands that are close to one another and you're debating because they both work on the same wind direction or a similar wind direction. Ah, I don't know what to do. Yeah. And in that particular instance, if your route takes you that way, it might make sense to drop a scouting camera on the B choice and you know, C. So that way when, you know, a 160 walks past, you're like, oh shit, I should have sat there instead. Yeah. Right. But realistically, that's not the application that the majority of us are using this tool for. So as you said, it sort of eliminates a lot of the necessity of the tool. And I understand the standpoint on public ground, but that's sort of a tough thing. It's a slippery slope too. Does it eventually lead to private ground, or do they leave it as public ground? I get what they're saying about people claiming spots, but Shoot, that's always been the case. Like if someone put a tree stand up on public, when I used to hunt public a lot here, if somebody put a ladder stand up, man, like, you better clear out because, you know, they're going to give you heck that that's their spot. And it's like, well, no, man, it's public ground.
Yeah.
But
I've been hunting here for 25 years.
Yeah, exactly. I've sat here on opening day of gun season since I was a boy, you know, and it's like that's tough. Boy, that's a sticky wicket right there.
You want to talk? You want to talk about a group, like, imagine this, especially in Iowa, where all these premier farms are at. This is where, you know, I'm not going to say all of it, but a majority of the big buck content comes out of Iowa on these manicured farms. Just imagine if there was a ban on trail cameras on private property. Number one, how do you police it? Number two, there would be a shit storm from people at this point.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure the scouting camera manufacturers would have a rebellion. And then I'm pretty positive that Duracell and Energizer would step in because I'm pretty sure we're floating most of their businesses anymore. I mean, I look at how many batteries I buy annually and I'm like, yeah, man, I should have a dividend in all this.
Yeah, you know? Right. I added it up a couple years, and I'm getting more trail cameras this year, okay? And so I...
Who isn't?
Yeah, right? And so, I have my old ones that I've collected. I'm getting some new standard ones, and then I'm also getting some new cell cams this year. And I go through about $300 a year in batteries for my trail cameras across all my farms. So all the farms that have permission to hunt. So that's a lot of money for just taking pictures of deer, dude.
Yeah, exactly. I bought batteries, and the price of batteries has gone up considerably, right? I bought batteries yesterday just for household stuff, for headlamps and for the kids' Xbox controllers and whatever else. Yep. Just two packs of batteries, and I think it was like $40 or $50 just for two, you know, multi-packs of batteries. It's wild. Yeah. And I mean, not to start sounding like a hippie, but the thing that I worry about is that, you know, the grave amount of waste that comes along with that, right? I mean, the vast majority of us are not using rechargeable, reusable batteries. We're just grabbing, you know, off the shelf stuff, and then we pitch them into the trash. And man, we have this giant paper bag, to my wife's dismay, that sits, kind of on this one chair by on our dining room table. And it's just filled with batteries, and the majority of them are from scouting cameras. Yeah. And I have a hard time tossing them into the trash can And I know there are some outlets that'll take them, and I need to do a better job of just getting them there. But it's crazy how many batteries, just me, I have used over the years. Now you multiply that by however many hunters are in Iowa, and then, you know, take it to the largest scale, however many hunters are in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly.
How many of those guys are using scouting cameras, and how many of them are buying more each year like you and I are and everything else. It's like I said, we're keeping these battery manufacturers in business.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. Oh man, here, now I'm gonna, before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, I want to have a little feel good moment that happened to me yesterday. So I was at the gym and I'm going through some shoulder stuff. And I'm taking it easy. I've changed my exercises to prevent stress on my shoulder. So instead of regular bench press, I'm doing decline bench press. Okay. And that helps keep my elbows in and helps with the shoulder stress, and pain. And so I put 225 pounds on, and I walked over to this younger guy and I was like, "Hey man, can you spot me?" He spotted me before, and he's like, "Oh yeah, okay, I'll come over and spot you." And he goes, 225 on decline, man, that's pretty good." I go, "Yeah." And then we started having this conversation about my shoulder and how I felt like I'm feeling weak, and I'm just trying to go slow so I don't hurt it, and I'm trying to get my muscle built up. And I said, "Hey man, that's what happens when you get old." And he goes, "Yeah, I know how you feel. I'm 19 now, and I'm like, "Are you kidding me, dude?" I said, I have tears in both my labrums. I've had multiple knee surgeries. My back is jacked. My neck is jacked. Like, I can't open my mouth the right way because of broken jaw in the past." I said, "Just wait till you hit your 40s, bud." And he goes, "40s? How old are you?" And I said, "I'm 43. And he goes, "Dang, you look like you're in your 30s. And I was like, "Oh, thanks, bud. That made me feel good."
Yeah. Let's go tear it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
And I look back at my 19-year-old self, and I was just like, there was part of me that wanted to come out and was like, "Let me tell you how to not live your life for the next 20 years, okay?"
Yeah.
I don't know. Yep. That was a bit of a feel good moment I had yesterday. Built my confidence up. I got one more rep out of that set. Because of that guy saying that to me. So I was like, "Yeah,
I would imagine.
I still got it."
Yeah. Then woke up this morning and be like, "Damn it, I should have done one last rep."
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Tim Kemp, you have gone on several elk hunts in your past. Backcountry really is what I want to get into here. I did an episode recently with my good friend Bob Polanik. He is also an elk hunter and a serious deer hunter. And we talked about the basic necessities of deer hunting, right? And so we covered bow hunting specifically, and we covered all of the bows, the arrows, the broadheads, the sights, the rest, that kind of stuff. So we're going to omit that because it's obvious if you want to go on a bow hunt or a backcountry hunt, you need a weapon, okay? But we're going to leave weapons out of it today. And I want to try to get as minimalistic as possible for somebody who is going to be going on I want to cover hunting from maybe a cabin, hunting from a hotel room, and also, which will change the direction of this podcast, would be hunting out of a tent too, as well, if we decide to leave the road and go true backcountry style. So I want to talk about minimalistic products here, and I'm just going to kind of pass the ball to you and just see what you have to say, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, man. I think one of the most important things that you have to focus on when you're doing any type of hunting, especially if it's something that you're new to or you're just learning that process, is knowledge, mm-hmm. right? You want to have knowledge. And I don't care if you're hunting out of a cabin or a hotel room or a tent or any of that. Like, you got to know whatever it is that you're chasing, how to chase it and be the most effective predator. So you can take that weapon and you can make the most out of it. You can use your maps efficiently, you know, on your Onyx or your Hunt Stand or your, you know, Spartan Fort or whatever app you're using. You can make sure that you're maximizing your gear. So like, to me, that's the most essential thing. Like you got to have knowledge of your equipment, but then you got to have knowledge of whatever you're chasing after. And there's so many great outlets out there now to get knowledge for any type of hunting, whitetail hunting, antelope hunting, elk hunting, mule deer, podcasts, YouTube. You know, there's this thing called reading. I don't know. It's weird.
Does anybody do that anymore?
I'm not sure. It's strange. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of great people out there that are producing really awesome content to help people be more successful at all of this.
Right.
You know, so that's my biggest thing is seek knowledge first, right? Because that's where you're going to really see the big change in your game. Because you could have the best boots, the best pack, the best bow, you know, the best that spent 10 grand on all that stuff. And the thing that was free, right? The thing that you could go and find everywhere else, the knowledge, you didn't capitalize on that.
Yeah.
And then all that stuff isn't worth anything. Nothing.
Yeah. That's an awesome point, is knowledge. And dude, I made a post on this is a loaded topic because I made a post yesterday on Instagram about master classes. Like,
oh, I saw that. Yeah.
People paying money to get that knowledge, and to get that information. And I pretty much said, like, if you're going to plant food plots and you're going to do some habitat work and things like that, yes, by all means, that stuff is scientific in nature. So you're going to need to have knowledge before you go planting seeds into rocks, right? You know, like there's a whole bunch of information that you need to know, pH levels in soil, you know, certain trees and vegetations and things like that. But when it comes to hunting strategy, I always say, like, dude, just get
out. You
gotta
live it.
Yeah, you gotta go do it. You gotta live it. And so, I don't know. I don't like paying for information, especially like what you just said. YouTube, man, any and everything is on there, especially on hunting strategy. So, now, what kind of knowledge? That's a broad term. What kind of knowledge specifically would you recommend people going to seek out when it comes to hunting gear?
Well, I think that a lot of people see elk hunting as this super majestic, you know, they think about the yellow quaking aspens and, you know, all that stuff. And that exists, right? But what I've experienced during my tenure as an elk hunter, and there's people whose tenure is, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times as long as mine, right? And is that elk hunting has changed dramatically, you know, because of that knowledge pipeline and because of that information. So you have to sort of work your way through that process. But for me, the things that I think are the most important are you have to be able to identify circumstances and situations and terrain where elk are likely going to be, right? Because if we're going to go out there, we want to find them, right? And then once we found them, we want to be able to engage with them, right? You know, so I don't care if you're going out with a rifle or you're going out with a bow, two different strategies there, right? Because if you're going out with a rifle, odds are, the way most seasons lay out, they're probably going to be a little less vocal, but you can still use vocalization strategy, right?
Right.
If you're going out with a bow, they're going to be a lot more vocal, especially if you're in the heart of the, you know, the breeding time, and you're going to have different strategies. So you want to know the things to say, when to say them, and how to create, you know, ideal setups. So that way, when you're saying those things, it's like turkeys, right? You know, turkeys get hung up, or there are certain terrain features that you want to look for so as not to make it so a turkey hangs up at 70 or 80 or 100 yards because there's a big log that's blocking their view and whatever. And then, that was that log or a little crick. I mean, you know, any sort of hang up thing. So me, it's like you want to be able to identify those two things fundamentally. Where are the elk, and then how do I engage with them?
Right.
And then that sort of cascades to what you mentioned earlier, proficiency with your equipment, right? You know, like I want to be able to shoot my bow, or I want to be able to shoot my rifle and do whatever. Like, yeah, we could talk about glassing. We could talk about all sorts of different things, because this topic is really robust and really broad. There's a million different things that we could convince people to spend their money on, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, right.
By talking about it. And then you got to convince your significant other, like, that you need to spend all that money on stuff, or do a really good job of hiding it, right?
Or set your entire life up around it so it can be considered an expense instead of having to talk with people about it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I mean, the other thing for me is, like, when it comes to knowledge, I think fitness plays a big role. You know, you're talking about being in the gym and doing whatever, like, in order to get to those places and be able to, like, if you are successful, be able to carry the pieces and parts of that animal out.
Yep.
Fitness is a big component. Don't get me wrong, man. There's probably 100 guys that are going to listen to this and be like, that asshole, he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, I don't do anything, and I walk out, you know, OTC, public land, whatever. And, you know, I've shot a bull 5 times or whatever.
Yeah.
It happens. But the statistics on elk harvest are, you know, 10 to 15% on most units, like general or OTC units, or less.
Yep.
So those guys that are cursing at me, they're few and far between.
Yeah.
You know, so, but to me, those are like the essentials and the tools that we need most to start out with, because that makes everything else that we're going to talk about more effective, more efficient, and more productive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You use the word terrain there. Okay. And how important is knowing the terrain that you're going to be hunting in when it comes to knowing your gear selection, planning your gear selection?
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Well, I think, I guess for me, I have like a little bit more of a broad approach to certain things, meaning, like, you know, I'm going to wear the same boots no matter what. Now, I might wear I have a couple pairs of boots that I bring with me on every trip. And I have one pair that's a little stiffer than the other. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be more steep and it's going to be a little more aggressive, I'm going with that stiffer boot. Mm-hmm. You know, I have less fatigue at the end of the day, you know, in my feet and in my lower body, if I'm wearing that stiffer boot. If it's a little less aggressive, a little flatter, doing a lot more flat walking, that stiff boot can really suck if you're doing a lot of flat walking. We hunted in Idaho, my one hunting partner and I, a few years ago, and we walked this one trail from this one trailhead. We walked in like 3 miles, right? And then that's where we started doing our hunting. And it was a relatively flat walk in. Well, I wore my stiff boots when I did that. And I came out that evening and, like, oh my gosh, my shins were just on fire from just clock, 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 clock in those stiff boots. Now, there was another spot that we hunted where it was a short, flat walk, and then we started going up a pretty heavy incline, and then we went up into some real steep stuff. I wore the same stiff boots. I was really glad I wore them that day because, I, you know, again, less foot fatigue, less fatigue all the way up my kinetic chain, you know what I mean? So I think it just really depends upon what you're doing, but you're going to rock the same pack. You're going to, you know, do all that stuff. Now, if we're talking about, let's say, tents, right? You know, probably, and you're going to do a backcountry thing, you want a small footprint of your tent, because if you're in steep stuff, it might be difficult to find a flat spot to put that tent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or a lot of guys are using teepees now and everything else. And so, you know, just, or tarps, you know, and that type of thing. So yeah, it's just, what is your terrain dictating? And back to my thing about knowledge, like there's all sorts of tutorials and content. You could dive into a rabbit hole of hours of opinion on this and validation of that opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I was thinking about as you started talking about this was terrain. As far as I went into a day one in one of my first elk hunts in Colorado, dark timber, deadfall everywhere. Mm-hmm. I had my spotting scope with me. Well,
yeah, you don't need that.
I didn't need it. Right. And so, but when I go on a mule deer hunt out west where it's more wide open and I can, my strategy is to sit high glass type scenario. Definitely want to bring that. So from my perspective is knowing your terrain will allow you to bring certain products with you. I had however many ounces or pounds of spotting scope that were just a brick. Basically it served no purpose on that dark timber hunt.
Yeah. And I mean, when we first started elk hunting, I didn't own a spotting scope.
Yeah.
You know, all I had was a pair of binos. Mm-hmm. And I had the best binos that I could afford at that time. And I think we've talked about this on other podcasts we've recorded. Like, I've gone through iterations of binos over the years to get to the place where I am now. And like, I don't need to buy other binos. If I'm going to buy another pair, it's going to be exactly what I have. Cause I've seen the path to get to the best stuff that I could afford, you know? Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of guys that I know that won't even carry binos if they're hunting dark timber. I'm not one of those guys. I feel like, you know, I might need to identify something at 40 yards that require a pair of binoculars. It could be a porcupine, but I always rock binoculars, but I very, very rarely carry a spotter. And if I do, it's because I'm trying to identify things a mile away. I'm not out there looking for a specific class of bull or a specific class, like if I'm antelope hunting, like a specific class of antelope. So I need to be able to identify exactly what's going on. Now, you know, I was watching a short film last night, and this guy took like, you know, 14 years to draw this tag, and he's not going to burn up that time, you know, to shoot a mediocre bull, you know, especially if they have time to you know, utilize the full season.
Yeah.
So a spotter becomes critical there. It's just like sheep. Like, you don't want to go after a sheep. Maybe it's got to be 8 years old, and you got to be able to count the rings in order to know what it is.
Yep.
Well, you want a spotter. It's an important part to your thing. And different types of terrain are gonna, like you said, require different equipment. And you know, what you're utilizing or what you're not utilizing is going to definitely come into play.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned boots there, and you mentioned that you bring a couple pairs of boots. Let's talk specifics a second. You know, if I was to run one pair of boot, right. Like how would you go about picking one pair of boots for a potential elk hunt that could be some flat and some steep? How's that? What's that process look like?
Well, a lot of the good boot manufacturers like will put what their flex range is on their boots. If I were like, just if a newbie called me up and they said, hey, like I want to get a boot, I'd be like, I'd try this one because, you know, I've tried that boot, or I know somebody who's rocked that boot. It's got enough support and enough flex that, like, back to my anecdote earlier, like, you're not going to get beat up walking on the flats, but it's got enough stiffness that if you got to climb some steep grades, it's going to work to your advantage and minimize your fatigue.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would say like a mid flex boot by comparison to, like, you know, there are guys out there that are rocking Salomon sneakers hunting elk, you know, because that's what they prefer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are guys that are rocking these super stiff Scarpas that, you know, other people will use for sheep hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's probably a little overkill, given the stuff in the terrain that I generally hunt. So I'd look for like a mid flex, you know, like, if I'll just use Crispy as an example, like, you know, and their thing, like the number three, it's right in the middle of the range. There's 1 to 5, you know, they started out, most of their boots were on the stiffer side, but I think what they've experienced with the American hunters is, you know, we want stuff that's like mid or maybe a little bit more flexible. And it just depends upon what you're hunting. If you're going to go into, let's say an area, again, like a lot flatter, more sage flats, not a lot of aggressive terrain, New Mexico, you know, don't worry about it. If you're going to be in some of the aggressive stuff in Colorado, go with a stiffer boot. As long as you feel comfortable. And then, you know, the big thing is don't buy a pair of boots 3 days before you're going out west. Yeah, you know, give them some time for them to adjust to you and you to adjust to them. And you know, the old break-in period, like there's a lot of manufacturers that make boots that you could literally tie on today and hunt in tomorrow. But, you know, you can get a good feel for things as long as you give yourself advance warning of what might happen in utilization. Like go hang your deer stands in them, you know, go for a bunch of pack hikes with, break them in, get them utilized and fitting to you and your foot, because everybody's obviously a little bit different in every way.
Absolutely. Would you say, and it's hard to put a ranking on a specific product, but when you are covering more ground than a deer hunt, right? I mean, I'm just, and the example that I'm going to use here is from the perspective of someone who is an Eastern hunter going west, right? I walk 500 yards maybe to a tree stand. I park, I walk 500, 600 yards, maybe even to the guy who, let's just say he walks 1 mile deep into a piece of public here in Iowa. You're walking more than that out west, especially if you're doing any type of backcountry or spot and stalk style hunting. Would you say that the boot itself or a boot sock combination is probably one of the most, if not the most important product that you would purchase for a hunt like that?
Yes, absolutely. Because if your feet get beat up, you're going to do your best to try and care for them,
yeah.
But it can literally ruin your hunt. Yeah. I mean, I'm one of my first years, we went up into this spot back to stiff boot versus non-stiff boot. And I was running just like a regular hiking boot and, you know, nothing crazy, nothing expensive, you know, let's say $130 to $150 boot. And it was a decent boot. I had used it for doing other backpacking stuff out west. And we went up into this one basin and dude, I don't know what it was. There's this one spot that pitched up a bit more. And I came out of there that night and I didn't have blisters, but I had hot spots and I was worried about getting blisters. And I literally went back to our camp and I just soaked my feet in the river just to get them to chill out a little bit. And the next day I actually put duct tape on my feet, because that was before I knew about Leukotape or,
you know,
best use of moleskin and whatever else. And it helped. But, you know, I think if I had gone with an even less expensive boot or a boot that didn't fit me as well, I would have had full blown blisters. And in that terrain, my hunt would have been over, you know? And I think that year we were out there for like 8 days.
Yeah.
And this was on day three. So
yeah.
I would have had 5 days of sitting in a tent, a burned up tag, you know, and everything else. So yeah, I think boots and socks are critically important. Like, you know, I'm sure you have this at your house. Like, you have like the missing sock, you know, as we call them, the missmate, right? And I'll scream at my wife. I'll be like, "Where the fuck is the other sock?" You know, and she's like, "I don't know why you're making such a big deal." I'm like, "Dude, because they're like $25 a pair,
right?"
And right. Like, whatever. But in my opinion, like, that's one of the best investments that you can make in this process is taking care of your feet, boots and socks. Go try and find a place where you can try them on, go to different shows throughout the year and see where you can go and test stuff. I know it's hard because you can't walk long distances, but you know, just good socks, and everybody's got their own preferences, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't skimp. I prefer like a wool, you know, wool, a merino sock mm-hmm. over most things. Yeah. Like, mid, you know, lightweight to midweight with a good pile to it. I just feel like my feet experience a lot less fatigue in something like that. But yeah, to me, boots and a pack are two of the biggest things that I think are critical for that type of hunt.
Yeah. Let's go to packs now. I'll just kind of share a thought here. And mine was, I've always been the guy who, so my first elk hunt was with a pack that I had no business taking on with me. I mean, it was, man, there was no support in it. There was, yeah. I mean, it was a bag from Cabela's, but it was like $40 and it was just enough to stuff all of my bag, but it had no support. So if I actually did have to pack an elk out, I would have been screwed. Okay. So since then, I've gone with the idea that overkill is better than underkill. And so I don't, you know, am I going to pack an elk out? Probably not. Am I going to pack a mule deer out? Probably not. But if I do, I want to be ready for it. So with my thought is overkill is better. How do you approach picking a pack?
Same, you know, and I've done the same thing as you, been through a number of different packs and arrived where I am. I guess if, like, you know, if I were giving advice, like, I would say to people, like, if you think that you want to have like a pair of Leica binoculars, right? That's the dream. And you think that's the best thing to serve you. Don't mess around with this pair and this pair and this pair. Take the time, save your money, grab a pair of Leicas, you know, and do it. I'm just using that as a brand. You know what I mean? And the same thing holds true with a pack. Like, if you, like, my first pack was this Kelty pack, and it had an okay internal frame system, but it was just that. It was okay at best. I can't even remember what it was made out of. And, you know, and then I'll refrain from bagging on brands here. And I've had packs from some pretty high end brands, but, like, you know, way back when I started doing this, the big debate was internal frame system, external frame system.
Right.
To me, it seems like everybody's gone to like an internal frame, mm-hmm. you know, and then made it so the bag can separate. And then there's some sort of meat shell for that type of thing. But, you know, I would go, I guess it's probably actually not an internal system now that I'm thinking about it, but, like, you know, I would definitely make the investment in time to figure out what bag fits you. Again, same with the boots. Like, if you have an opportunity to go and test something out, go and do that, but take the time to figure out that what that is. And then again, make that investment. And if you don't think you're going to elk hunt every year, talk to somebody you trust and borrow their pack. You know what I mean? Like, I have a buddy who is coming with me this year, and he has an old pack of mine, and it's not one of my favorite packs. And I just gave it to him a number of years ago. It's okay, but it's not great. And I'm going to have him borrow another friend of mine's pack for this year, cause I know it's going to suit him better. And maybe I'm hedging my bets on killing something, but, you know, I want him to not suffer, because frankly, man, even with a good pack, pulling an elk out of the timber it sucks.
Yeah.
It's the worst part of the whole, it's the best worst part of the whole thing. So that's a place where I wouldn't cut any corners, you know, and make sure the pack fits you. You know, like, there's so many good brands and there's so many good models, but you got to find what works for you and just go for it. I at this point in my life, before, I wanted to elk hunt every year, so I would skimp on my equipment a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I've just evolved through that process. I kind of like identify one thing that I want to focus on every year and make that better in my arsenal of gear. And like what I have now, I'm pretty well set up. And I always find some little ancillary things that I want to add to my system, but, like, I've got my big stuff, you know, and it's all squared away and set and, you know.
Yeah. I look at gear from a usage percentage. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I use my boots every second of every day. So if I'm going to budget, if I'm going to budget something, I'm going to put more money towards the things that I'll be using. Pack is another one. Like if I'm going to spend money, I put my pack on every day. I take stuff out of it. I use it to carry things to and from certain locations. And then I need it, you know, for those just in case moments too, like just in case I kill, I need it to be great at what it does to make my life easier. So again, I use a pack every second of every hunt for the most part. And then from there, it kind of stair steps down into like, what can you get away with after that? So, and again, we're not talking about like weapons here, because that's a whole nother, you know, you could get away with a cheap one versus an expensive flagship model of a popular brand and so forth. But so we've talked about packs, we've talked about boots, as far as necessities are concerned. What's the next necessity that people often overlook?
Supportive spouse.
Dude, this is legit. That's a legit, you know, like, if we're going to talk about money and where it's spent,
but yeah.
I'm going to vent here to you quick. So I do this for a living. Right.
Yeah.
So in order for me to continue to become educated and talk about hunting in a variety of different scenarios, I have to hunt. Right. Imagine listening to a hunting podcast where the host no longer hunts. Right. So right. This is me traveling for work in the fall. And so my wife goes, hey, what are we doing this summer for a trip? And I'm like, well, I don't know what she's like. Well, you go on your trips. On your little trips.
Yeah.
I feel like we should go on trips that I want to go on too. And instead of having the argument, you know, and justifying that this is kind of what I do for a living and being able to travel for, I look at it as traveling for work. She looks at it as this guy's going out and doing what he loves, which is all boiled down into liking where you're at. My wife has to travel to Philadelphia here within the next couple weeks. She doesn't want to go. And so like, I want so bad to use that. Hey, you went on your trip. Now, does that count as me going on my trip? But she's got to travel for work. And I think that's just a fight waiting to happen. So we're going to Nashville for 3 nights. And so I bought a trip for her and me just so I could go, like, just so the fall is a little bit more tolerable as far as the conversations that are had leading up to some of these hunts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you don't want to spend an enormous amount of time on this, but it really is true. I remember having this conversation a number of years ago with a friend of mine, you know, in the industry. He was a media sales guy, and we had this exact conversation of how his wife, you know, and my wife on occasion too, was always pushing back when we were going to do trips together and whatever else. Well, I was the media buyer. He was the media salesperson. Like it was business entertainment. It's no different than if you do whatever else and you take somebody else for a sales dinner or you're going to do an educational event and, you know, it's in this tropical place because that's what it is.
Yep.
But when you actually like your job or you've turned your hobby into your job,
yep.
People don't take it seriously anymore. I mean, I remember my parents did the same thing. I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm going here to do this. And like, I can't believe how much you're traveling to go hunting or whatever. And although they were pretty supportive, it was just, I'm like, well, it's my job.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I do. And it wasn't probably until 5 or 6 years ago where Heather even like took a step back and was like, holy smokes. Like, yeah, it really is your job. Like you're able to talk with these people about these things in an authentic way, or you're able to do this. And I think it was more when she really started paying attention to, you know, my business in general. And then when she started to sell real estate with me too, I think she really started to see like how everything sort of wrapped around all of that. And I feel like the word authenticity is really, really overused, but yeah. You know, when you're actually a true participant, the authenticity is there, and right. and your decision making process for whatever it is a lot more sound because yeah. you've actually had that time in the field. And dude, there are guys that blow me away with their utilization and time in the field. And I'm not gonna like go on and rattle off names and give kudos here, but there are some guys that are just completely next level with this stuff. Yeah. And it's their job too. Yeah. And they're in the field literally 10 times more than I.
Yeah, for sure.
So support a spouse. Yeah, probably the next biggest. Yeah.
So little derailment right there, but let's get back into that then. The next product that you feel on any type of, I don't know, is there a necessary product that's both for backcountry, true backcountry, leaving your truck, hiking in 3 miles, setting up a tent, then going another mile or two every day? Is there another product that you can use in that scenario as well as hunting out of your truck every day or hunting from a cabin every day?
Mapping software.
Okay.
That would be my thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you got to know where you're going. You got to know what you're doing and you got to be able to get back to wherever it is.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's one of the biggest changes in how hunting is done and hunting success. You know, again, when I first started hunting out west and elk hunting and everything else, we didn't have Onyx. I didn't even have a GPS at that time. We used to, you know, buy our maps from MyTopo and I'd be like, I think we're on this knob right here, and trying, you know, I was never a Boy Scout, like trying to navigate with a compass and like, you know what I mean? Like, and, that's how we did it. And we would take highlighters and we would mark stuff up and we'd write notes on our map, and you know, and that's how we did it. And like, I helped a buddy of mine who drew a pretty good tag for a unit that I'd hunted a bunch last year. And he's like, you got maps? I'm like, heck yeah, I got maps. Then, you know, sending them things. And then I took a lot of what was on my maps. I dropped it into my mapping software. And then I was sharing waypoints with him. You know, and I know some guys don't like that, but when a guy takes, you know, 10 years to draw a tag, I want him to be successful.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it back to the public land thing, it's public land, man, you know? And so, I mean, you know, I think mapping software is huge and knowing how to use it. Back to my thing about knowledge,
like
dive in, man.
Yeah.
You know, take advantage of everything.
Yeah. So I like that answer for the reason that you gave, but at the same time, I feel, especially when you're on a public land hunt or even you get access to a private ground on some place that you're not familiar with. Back in the day before this software, I feel like you could cross a fence and I don't mean blatantly trespass, but accidentally, you know, you're looking at a map and you're going, okay, I think I can go to this fence. You cross it and maybe you run into a rancher or a farmer out there and he goes, hey, what are you doing here? I'm saying, well, I got permission from so-and-so. And you show him a paper map and he'd go, hey, I'm sorry, you're on the wrong farm. That's the fence right there. Okay, shit happens, it goes. Now, everybody, landowners, non-hunters know that this technology exists, so they are no longer lenient with trespassers. Dude, you got it on your phone right there. Why are you on my property? Get off of it, you know, or hey, I'm going to call the DNR and you're going to get a trespassing fine, right? And so that is the reason why I would want to do it, because if, I don't know, man, like nobody, there's no leniency anymore. I can remember, I mean, even way back in the day, in the late 90s, when I was shed hunting, early 2000s, when I was shed hunting, I would just walk wherever I wanted to. And the farmers would be out in the fields and they're like, hey, what are you doing out here? And I would just be like, I'm looking for shed antlers. And they'd be like, oh, okay. And no one cared about trespassing, even in a scenario like that. But now that it is completely different, times have changed, and you have to know, for that reason, but also for safety reasons, you have to know where you are at all times.
Yeah. You're the blue dot. You know what I mean? That's what I say to people all the time. Like, you know, and I know specific instances where a friend of mine was mule deer hunting in South Dakota with another friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And somebody approached them and was like, "Hey, you're trespassing." And he's like, "No, we're not." And the guy's like, "Yes, you are." He's like, "No, we're not. Look here, I'll show you on my, yes, on my app." Right. Yep. And he takes out, and he says, "Where the blue dot?" And it was an old rancher guy, you know, mm-hmm, "Where the blue dot?" And the guy says, "No, that's not the line." And he literally walked to the BLM monument, right, and said, right there, man, I'm on public land." He was on the right side of the line. Literally, right. They were on the line, yep, you know, and they were, I think they were using it for access at that point, but yep, they were on the right side. I had it happen in Colorado one time on an OTC hunt a few years ago. There was just this little spot where the public boundary crossed the road, gave just enough distance to park like two vehicles, mm-hmm, and it was just a little triangle, and then you could use that to go up into the Forest Service land. And I had a guy pull over. He said, "You can't park here." I said, "Yes, sir, I can." He said, "No, you can't." And I said, "Yes, sir, I can." And I pulled out my map. I showed him on a thing, and he said, "Oh, I didn't realize it did that. I thought it stopped at the other side of the road." Yep. And he left, and he left me alone. Nothing mm-hmm happened to our rig. I've heard of incidences where things have escalated otherwise, mm-hmm, but, and that's just one example.
Yeah.
Also with mapping software, listen, man, you talked about being in your 40s earlier. I'm in my late 40s now. And, you know, I don't remember everything like I used to. I'm not a steel trap like I used to be. And yeah, that software it replaces my poor memory. And, yeah. You know what I mean? It gives, yep, me an opportunity to take better notes, longer notes. So instead of scribbling on my maps and drawing little X's and, "Oh, elk," like, I know what day I saw it, what time of day. You know, I put in notes like, you know, heard a bugle or missed a bull or, you know, here's a meat cache or whatever the circumstance is, and I have an exact waypoint, an exact time, exact day. I know everything that happened, and depending upon the level of notes I take, I can be pretty darn detailed.
Yeah.
You know, and that stuff is pretty critical as you move forward. Like the tag I drew this year, I drew 6 years ago, and I'll be able to go into that place and hopefully have a jump shot on what I had before. And when we originally went there, we e-scouted the whole thing, and then we got on site, and things were what we expected in some areas, a little different in others. But now I have all of that, like, "Oh, I'm not going to worry about these spots for these reasons." You know, there was, you know, too steep, or, you know, whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I had a map, I probably wouldn't remember all that stuff.
Right.
I wouldn't remember those encounters. I wouldn't remember how to navigate into things and everything else the same way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's almost like buying peace of mind in a way. So, that's a great answer. Next one. Is there another one outside of mapping software that is, that it's crossover for all different types of scenarios?
I mean, dumb stuff, you know, again, like, I feel like game bags and,
yeah,
you know, processing stuff, you know,
yeah,
again, like, you have to look at why you're there. I mean, you know, like, everybody's gonna have a different opinion about a water bladder or,
right,
you know, that type of, everybody needs a water bladder, everybody needs snacks, but everybody's gonna have a different opinion about snacks, you know, that,
right,
type
of, right, you need right, food on some of these, right, some of these types of hunts,
right. But like, I feel like game care is really important, you know, when it comes to this mix. So you want to have the right tools for that. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have adequately sized game bags. You want to make sure you have an adequate number of game bags. You want to make sure that you have a good knife or a set of knives, mm-hmm, and a sharpener, paracord. Like, I guess what I'm really focusing on is more like a kill kit and yeah, game care.
Yes.
You know, that to me is like, why come and do this if I don't have the requisite stuff and I use a, you know, a really inexpensive Allen cheesecloth bag,
mm-hmm,
and I don't mean to shit on Allen, but like, you know, and then next thing I know, I got all these flies laying larvae because the holes in the cheesecloth stretched out a lot when I hung my stuff, you know?
Yep.
So I would say that's for me, like, a pretty critical thing. You know, I want to lose as little of my meat as possible. Right. I've been fortunate when I've been successful, I have lost almost no meat, you know, and it's because I, you know, put the investment into that stuff, and you want to be able to process safely and quickly and that type of thing, you know, and build out a little system, man. I use, you know, that really thin painting tarp. Like, I have a section of that I have folded up. It weighs nothing. I have that in my kill kit. I lay that down, you know, and I drop our quarters or whatever on that stuff. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's like the next essential thing, because, you know, we could talk about clothing and all that, but to your point, I think you could get away with Walmart clothing. I don't, you know, if you really had to, you can get away with a Walmart bow. You can get away with, you know, that type of stuff, but you can't get away with Walmart boots most of the time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right. Yeah. I'll just second that, knife. I have cut up an animal with a dull knife before, because I wasn't prepared for it. And it was a horrifying experience, you know, basically pushing meat to cut it, right? Instead of, you know, sharp. When it comes to knives, do you prefer fixed blade over disposable blades?
I have always sort of erred on the side of fixed blade. And mostly because I'm always worried about safety more than anything else, especially in, you know, in the back country, we'll call it. And I've always been worried about those systems, you know, and they're so stinking sharp, you know what I mean? And like, but you put pressure on them. Like, I'll use an example. Like, I killed a bear up in Canada and we were processing that bear, and I was using a replaceable blade system. And kept breaking the blades and popping the blades off. I never cut myself, but the outfitter that we were hunting with said how he had cut himself a number of times pretty good using a replaceable blade system. And for that reason, I'm like, yeah, I'm enough of an idiot. I don't need anything, you know, working not in my favor in that regard. I definitely see the merits in it. It's just, for me, I just prefer a fixed blade system, and I bring a sharpener with me. You know, and I one of the things I will say is, like, I'm using a different brand of knife this year, and this going into this year, the only thing that I've experienced that dulls a knife faster than an elk hide is hogs. And it's because they have so much dirt and mud and dust and whatever in their fur, and it's just really coarse fur. And I feel like it's the same with elk. Like, they can dull a knife out pretty darn quickly. So, like, a good sharpener as part of that kill kit.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal in my mind.
Is your sharpener one that you drag the blade across, or is it a stone that you work?
I have both, and I've brought and used both. And I don't really prefer one or the other. I think sometimes it's like a little bit of my laziness and or my confidence in one or the other. So, like, I have one of those little work sharp sticks that's a little flat thing. And, you know, I can do that. But I always feel like I don't fully know what I'm doing there. So am I getting the most out of that system? So I do have another one that you can pull it through. And I tend to prefer that one.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Yep. Knives, necessity, especially for a kill. I mean, and then any other thing that you want to use it for, like cutting a length of rope, or, you know, the little kit that I have has a bone saw in it. So it's like a bone saw, which is, you know, it would, that particular bone saw probably wouldn't work on an elk bone because I'd be there all day. Would it work? Yes. But it would require a lot of effort from me. But that can also be used to cut a branch or a twig or whatever the case, whatever the case may be there. The next thing is game bags. Now, I started off with the cheesecloth style bags, right? When I first started. But then I had, and the only reason I like them now is because I had a guy who listens to the podcast send me some that his company makes. And so I sent them, and we used them on a mule deer hunt that a guy I went with killed on. And we put, like, it was tent canopy, basically. It's like tent style, very light, very thin, but very durable. It's got those square, so it's like a rip prevention type of material.
Yep.
And we used it. It worked out great. Blood all over the place. White in the washing machine.
Yep.
And you turn them inside out, wash them, back to normal, and now you got reusable game bags. And so there's a jump up in durability, and then the ability to reuse them, to me, is just, it's a no-brainer. So I like that style of game bag.
I agree 100%. Like, you know, I shot an elk in Wyoming, and then the place I was using was a processor in Colorado. Took all our meat, all my meat in the game bags, and, like, you know, dropped it off. They processed it, went back a day or two later to go pick everything up. And the woman that was checking us out, she gets me all my meat and whatever. And then she hands me back my game bags, and she said, "Oh, and we washed these for you as part of our service." I was like, "Hell yeah." You know what I mean? So I didn't even have to do it.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
I was like, "Ooh, this place is great." So, yeah, I agree. That's one of the nice things. They're not inexpensive. I mean, you're going to spend $100 or more,
right,
but you can buy them on sale. Like, I try not to mention products when we're on here, but like, or places to do stuff. But, like, you know, like Black Ovis usually has a couple of really good sales each year on their game bags, which are a good bag. And then there are a number of other companies that have a sale or two throughout the season. Like, take, you know, again, I don't mean to be mentioned stuff, but like Argali, Go Hunt, like, you know, all of them seem to have Caribou. Like, they all seem to have a preseason sale, you know, sometime between now and July, where they're dropping prices on game bags. Like, don't wait, just buy them. I buy them anyway, just so I have extra sometimes. I mean, I have multiple brands and multiple things, because on more than one occasion, I've been on a trip with somebody and they're like, "Oh, I forgot my game bags." And I'm like, "Jaha," you know, in my box of stuff, I have more than one set.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Absolutely. You know, we're running out of time here, but I want to finish with one last product. And I don't know, I don't talk about it a lot because I hunt from my truck on most of my stuff, on most of my trips. So I have gallons of water available.
Yep.
One of my trips to South Dakota, when I was backcountry, when I was spike camping in, I'd go in about a mile and a half, set up camp. And it was very dry that year, and like it is in most seasons. But I didn't bring enough water with me. I underestimated the ability of how much I was drinking, along with how much it took to cook that. And so what I'm getting at here is I needed to go get water. And I had a cheap-ass water filter that did not work. It was a pump that you would tie it to your water bladder, or it would, you screw in the water bladder into it, and then you would pump it. Well, the seal broke, and now I'm no water. Luckily, I had pills with me.
Yep.
So I took the dirty ass muddy, it was clear, but, you know, it was also in a cattle environment, and you know, so I don't want to say like a concentrated cattle environment. This was grasslands that cattle had probably been pulled out 2 months earlier, but still in all this area, cattle had been there. Right.
Yeah.
And so this water, knowing that there is, you know, that there hadn't been rain in a long time, this water had been sitting here for maybe a month without any kind of current going through it.
Yeah.
So I put my water in there. I put my pills in there. I allowed the necessary time for the pills to take shape, or, you know, to kill the bacteria. And I think I even threw maybe one more pill in than I needed to, just to be sure, right? And the water tasted like absolute crap. I mean, mud and dirt. There was sediment in it, so I was drinking the sediment, and I mean, it was just, oh, it was disgusting. But I had to do that for those 2 days because my water pump broke. Is there a recommendation for someone who is unfamiliar with how to treat water that you would, like a direction for a product that you would go in?
Boy, there's a lot of options out there for this. But I mean, I have always had really good luck with filters like what you're talking about, from a couple of specific brands. I think the Katadyn I've had pretty good luck with over the years, and I have several different products of theirs. I have one that's like a bag and it runs through a filter, so if there's a creek running by and I'm trying to process a lot of water, I'll even if I'm in the backcountry, I bring a small black container with me. It just folds up. I can't remember the brand, but it just folds up. I shove it in my pack. It weighs like a half a pound. It's not the end of the world. I'll carry it so that way I can come back. Because, like you said, food, freeze dried food, dehydrated food will eat up a lot of your water.
Right.
So I've had good luck using those. But recently, in the last few years, I started carrying a SteriPen with me.
Yeah.
All the time. And I carry a SteriPen and I carry a set of extra batteries for it. And so that way, if I'm in a situation where the elk are really doing something or whatever, and I'm getting low on water, I don't tend to get dry that often, but if I do, it's bad.
Yeah.
And then I can go and find water and do it. And then it sounds dumb, but like the other thing I carry with me all the time is a handkerchief so I can blow my nose, but also so when I'm getting water, like I can keep that sediment out when I dip and do whatever. And I carry a couple of heavy duty, like rubber bands that you would get like on a thing of berries or, around the bottom of your broccoli at the grocery store. I carry a couple of those for that exact reason. And it might take a little while to scoop because, that handkerchief is creating a barrier, but I've done that and then treated with a SteriPen, that's worked for me. I mean, I've done it where I just put an Nalgene down in a creek and SteriPen it, and we're good. But that's what I've been doing the last few years. But like you, I always carry treatment pills, and I've had to use them, and sometimes I don't know if those taste worse than the shitty water that I'm drinking or if it's just the water. Like I remember there was some guy a few years back who said that, and I've heard other people since then who've done it, like who have pulled water out of an elk wallow, and I still can't bring myself to to do that.
No, watching those videos of them pissing all over themselves.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like you're more hardcore than me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so. if you can filter it, I guess go for it. And then you got the pills with you, go for it. But the taste, especially cooking with it, I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, I don't think this guy cooked with it. I think he just was low to get him through the day, and he drank it. So, but it's bad enough, man. And it's, I mean, for me, you don't want to mess with that because, all those amoebas and parasites and whatever, like, not Giardia is not on my agenda.
Yeah, for sure, for sure,
ever.
Well, Mr. Kent, great conversation today. Really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and talk about this with us. Good luck this upcoming year, man. I'm sure I'm going to have you on here before the season starts, but good luck. So I think if I'm not mistaken, you're staying local this year. Do you have any major hunts? Well, looks like we lost Tim. But anyway, huge shout out to Tim. Thank you guys very much for tuning in today, and we will talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.